It's sort of like a cheat code in a lot of ways to having your thing feel different, having your commercial not feel like a commercial.
Get ready to hear from one of the geniuses behind the 2023 Grand Prix winning campaign, Clash from the Past. Hold on to your butts, it's Lawrence Melilli time. Lawrence is a creative director at Whedon Plus Kennedy, where he has spent the last decade creating iconic work for some of the world's most entertaining brands. His portfolio features an incredible range of projects, from a Japanese dating simulator for KFC to a Jordan campaign that updated one of the most famous images in sports history in the name of female empowerment, and a lot of other smart, dumb, big, weird, beautiful, award-winning stuff in between.
The idea here was really like, how do you satisfy both needs? The need to something that the target will engage with, because that's like, that's job number one, but also making something that will satisfy a creative person's need to be creative. Making that like not feel like an absolute throwaway is a very difficult task.
I cannot stress enough how important it is for you to hold onto your butts during this incredibly exciting interview. As a buttless, disembodied AI voice, trust me, life without a butt loses all meaning.
There will be a time in your creative career that you'll get to funnel some personal interests of yours into a brief. If you have that opportunity, jump on it, because like you'll never care about something more than...
So please secure your butts with duct tape or some kind of industrial-grade adhesive before pressing play. The Bagley talks to an important person will not be held liable for any damage to or irretrievable loss of your butts.
Well, it's your lucky day, you headphone-wearing bastard, because Jason Bagley's podcast is here. Oh yeah, he's gonna interview the most important person, so shut your mouth and f***ing open your ears. Yes, it's Jason's podcast, the best you can get anywhere. And if you pay a f***ing attention, you'll get your f***ing mind blown. But I should probably tone it down, cause Jason Bagley wouldn't want me to swear. Yes, it's Jason Bagley's podcast, baby. You better get out your notebook and your pen. He'll interview a motherfucking important person. God damn it, I did it again. It's Jason's podcast, here we go.
Lawrence, welcome to Bagley Talks to an Important Person. How does it feel to know that you are incredibly important? Is this news to you? Are you shocked, or is it? Are you thinking it's about time?
I think it's news to me, and I also think you may have made some sort of horrible mistake. I did get this calendar invite. I assume it's for me, but probably was intended for someone else.
No, I assure you, you are extremely important. I'm thrilled to have you on the podcast. I'm a big fan of your work for many years, and was lucky enough to lure you back to the Portland office when we needed a creative director on KFC, and glad you took it, because it's been fun to see what you did there.
It's true, and thank you for luring it back. It has been fun coming back, so appreciate it.
So tell me a little, like just briefly, where did you grow up? How did you get into advertising? Give me that story.
Yeah. So I grew up in New York, but not in like cool New York. I grew up in Long Island, which is like the suburb that's like sort of like about 45 minutes to an hour from Manhattan. And then ultimately wound up going to FIT, which is Fashion Institute of Technology, for college, which is obviously like an odd, I did go for like some sort of communication design. But it was an odd place to go because that's mainly a fashion school. But at the time, for a brief window of years, they actually had a really good program where we got a lot of our classes and a lot of our professors were like working industry professionals. So we'd take core classes in the school during the day, or you like learn computer things and, you know, other random skills. And then at night we would have all our classes in agencies with people. A lot of the people were people who were like graduates of FIT who are now like working in the industry. So we'd have classes at various ad agencies around Manhattan, like Ogilvy and J. Walter Thompson, some like the bigger places.
You were more tapped in than most people from an earlier age, it sounds like, but like, I've never met a good creative that didn't kind of love doing it from the time they were a kid in some capacity. So it's interesting. All right. So you have generously prepared some thoughts. Let's get into it. You want to share a screen?
I have. I can share a screen. So I want to preface all of this with, like, I don't know how to do this. I've never done this before. You gave me the assignment. I have a presentation that is many pages long. I don't want it to feel like a TED Talk, so please interject
ad nauseum. I will be annoyingly inquisitive.
Okay. So yeah, like I was saying, I've prepared some slides. Hi, I'm Lawrence, and this is my process. This slide is slightly misleading. This isn't really necessarily my process. This is sort of like a couple of ways to, like, free your brain up and arrive at an idea, because it's a harder task than we often give it credit for. So hopefully this will be helpful and shake some people out of whatever rut that they might be in, if they listen to this while they're in a rut. So picture this. You've just gotten a brief. You literally have nowhere to start. Your partner is off doing whatever partners tend to do, which is disappear sometimes. It's a terrifying prospect. And you need to get your brain moving. Staring at a brief will help sometimes. Will help, not help other times, but it can be really challenging, or at least I've found in my experience, like, just looking at a sheet of paper isn't always the most productive thing. So a lot of people don't know just where to start. And I think that's where I found, like, procrastination sets in, and you just sort of, like, you know, it's really easy to get up out of your seat and, like, walk laps around the office and, like, see who you can chat with or whatever. But I think, you know, there's better things to do than that, hopefully.
I'll do a better job. So, if I clean my whole office first, I'll be a better creative. So I got to clean my whole office before I start. And then I got some stuff. I better buy these things on Amazon before I start. And, I got to run an errand before I start, because then I'll be better.
Exactly. That kind of thing. I got to watch every video on YouTube in sequential order. And then once those are all done, there'll probably be new ones. I should watch those too. And then I'll start. So what I put together is a few ways that I've sort of tackled this void. As an art director, when I was purely a creative, or helped others tackle this void as a creative director, which I am now, over the years that I've been doing this, and hopefully this will be helpful for people. So the first thing I do, and I will say this is the first thing I have done when I was an art director on nearly every brief I've ever been on, is just go to the stash. And so this is an actual GIF of my stash. But so I have a folder on my desktop of everything I've ever seen on the internet that I thought was interesting at some point. And this folder is 15, 18, whatever amount of years I've been working in the industry, years old. And anytime I see something that I like, that I think is cool or interesting or inspiring or might come in handy down the line, just gets popped in the folder. And I can't imagine this is a thing that's specific to me. I think probably every creative has some version of this. But it sort of is like putting coins into a slot machine that you, or like investing in stocks or something. Like, one, you just put these things in, and they're like, one day you hope it'll pay off, because something will lead you, something in there, you'll look at it as you've sort of, like, shut your brain off and you let it do its thing naturally, and you scroll through it, something will, you know, start some little fire brewing in your brain that'll lead you to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. In the last couple of years, I've really loved putting, like, strange movie stills into this. Like, just there's huge databases just of stills from movies, which is, like, I guess a weird thing to exist on the internet, but it's really cool to just see just things and frames from movies in isolation, and things you know, I've wound up using framings of things and just, like, you know, the way something looks, or a small detail vignette from a Martin Scorsese movie or whatever, has led me to something bigger that I can form an idea around. Also, as an art director, I really love pieces of the design, just finding design. And it could be GIFs, it could be any, or GIFs, or however people pronounce it. And it can be anything, but it's all valuable.
I want to share something really quick before we get back to the episode. On the back end of our YouTube channel, it says that more than half of you that watch this channel frequently haven't yet hit the subscribe button. I just wanted to ask you for a favor. It will help me continue to do these interviews if you choose to hit subscribe. So if I could ask you for one favor, if you're enjoying these interviews and you want me to continue to make this podcast, could you please hit that subscribe button? Or if you're listening on a podcast platform, would you do me the favor of hitting follow? Thank you in advance, and I will repay you by promising to continue to bring on amazing talent and to keep making the show better and better. Do we have a deal?
So one example of where this came in handy was when we did the KFC rebrand way back when. And Baldwin, I listened to when you had Eric Baldwin on a few weeks ago, and he talked a lot about this. I'll be brief, and I'll actually give you, because he was the creative director on that, but I was the art director. I'll give you the art director's point of view of how this thing came to be, because he gave you more like the bird's eye big picture as the person who was responsible for the entire brand. I was sort of tasked with this one assignment, which was the first kickoff. So he talks quite a bit about going to their the KFC archives in Louisville. And he made a pilgrimage out there a few months before we went back. He and I and a couple other people went back. But he came back with a tremendous amount of like scans and photographs of ephemera, which was like super, super interesting. This is just like a handful of things I found in my folder. So he tacked it all up on the wall. It was just a cool thing to look at as we were working. But anything that was digital, I just grabbed and threw it into the folder, because I knew like as I was coming up with ideas and like trying to figure out what this brand, as an art director, figure out what the brand is supposed to be or say or feel like or whatever, I knew they'd probably come in handy. and then there was a tremendous amount of strategy work that had been done leading up to like the actual brief, because this was quite a while in the making. And what that distilled down to is KFC had lost its way. They were just sort of buying into trends. Like they were making their work at the time looked a lot like early YouTube videos with people eating mashed potatoes in a KFC, and like it would be like hashtag how do you KFC. It was very like ride the wave type work versus like what does this brand stand for. So all of the strategy and all the thinking and all the early stuff we had chatted about, we knew that the brand was always at its strongest when Colonel Sanders, who was the founder of the brand, was at the heart of it. But he died in the early 80s, 1980, something like that. So like how do you make a dead man the heart of your brand if he's he's no longer, like he was in everything, like from the 60s and up until his death, he was in every commercial for the most part. He was the voice of everything. He was like just out there selling his product at all times, putting his face on literally anything that you could put a face on, which was like interesting technique, but it like really worked. But that was like a backwards looking way of doing things. Like that was very much like that worked in the 60s and 70s. Like just put yourself out there. Like I'm just here and I'm just selling chicken and I got my stuff on everything. So we needed to find a way to bring that thinking, bring a dead man back to be the center of this brand who like was feeling kind of dusty at the time, and bring the whole pull the whole brand into the modern era a bit. But we started thinking like, all right, what if these were all written by Colonel Sanders, like very like late in the game? So like as his mind started to go and as he sort of like lost his marbles and has run out of things to talk about, and that started to seem really interesting to us. So we just started writing these little paragraphs, like that was it. And we would just like tack them up, very much grasping at straws for a reason to chicken. And we had, they're just for anything. If you're having a lucky day, if you just got out of the shower, if it's date night, if you've been working late, and just had a ton of these scenarios, and they ultimately morphed into something else. I don't know if anyone's ever really seen this, but this is the original Photoshop comp that I did for what Colonel Sanders would look like. So it's basically, it was originally supposed to be written for Nick Cage. I've had like, we thought it'd be funny to write Nicolas Cage a letter that Colonel Sanders had bequeathed the throne to him because he was the greatest, he would become the greatest actor of his time, and we wanted him to do it, but obviously that's not how it became. But it was Colonel Sanders in the middle of just like a small town American life, selling people chicken in any way he possibly could, which is like not far off from what it ultimately morphed itself into. And then,
by the way, I would absolutely love to see Nick Cage as the Colonel.
We tried hard, and then it didn't quite work out. And then I came off the brand and went on to other things, and ultimately wound up working in the New York office for a little while. And I heard they were very close to having Nick Cage for a different campaign, 3 or 4 years in, Nick Cage be the Colonel. And that made my heart warm. One nice thing to come out of this Photoshop comp, though, is anytime Nick Cage is in the news in any way, I get an email from Jeff Williams with the article with no context whatsoever. So my inbox is full of all the most current Nicolas Cage news. So that's the gift that has kept on giving for 7 years. So this was the world that ultimately got built out. We wound up shooting this wonderful director, Stacy Wall, who like put everything into it. And these weren't the best KFC commercials by any means, but it was a start and it felt different. This was the world we built out. And if you look at, and then we got Daryl Hammond, who made a lot of sense. He was he was sort of like the impersonator, historically from his work on Saturday Night Live. Although he was a different story on set, but, so like that combination, it's Colonel Sanders, he's back, he's selling you chicken again, he's finding all these new scenarios to sell chicken in the world that looks like it's got 1 foot in the past and 1 foot looking towards the future, and it all just sort of worked. But I think like more than anything, it was just the fact that like this guy was back in the middle of this brand. Like he occupied some space in everyone's head, whether you want him there or not. I think like if you grew up and you've ever driven past a Kentucky Fried Chicken, eaten at a Kentucky Fried Chicken, whatever, his face was on that bucket. So he like owned a little piece of your brain for better or for worse. So like to see that guy back in the center of it just kind of worked. And it really worked out. This is sort of like, I just really liked seeing him back out in the modern world where he did not belong, even though there was another man in his skin. We really liked doing it in earnest, and it all stemmed from like just having the right stuff at the beginning. Like there was like things to get our brain moving.
Creativity is just combining two or more things that already existed in a new and fresh and original way. And I think that's what your folder is. That's what it's like. You're one of the things is whatever the brief is for whatever brand you're working on. Thing number two is your things in the folder, for example. And then it's just that mashing of together, like all of the elements you just talked about pre-existed in some way, but you brought a new look, a new style, all these things together, and it creates something new.
The next thing I kind of want to talk about was just the idea of like building a world. Cause as an art director, that's something you can really like sink your teeth into, and it can get you out of a jam. Especially if you're in a really tight spot where like you have a client that's overly prescriptive or you've gone rounds and rounds on something and nothing is sticking. There's like sort of like a secret sauce you could put to something maybe to make something that is kind of pedestrian feel special. So an example that I'll walk you through is a campaign I made while I was working in the wide New York office for Fox Sports, which was a Thursday Night Football brief. So we had this brief for Thursday Night Football. Thursday Night Football, just a little background, had been historically like a really like uninspired lineup of games. It was sort of where like the worst matchups of the season went to die, but they televised them anyway. Because it's just a way to make money. But for the first time there was like actually good maps. It moved from whatever network was on the previous year to Fox Sports. They put money into it because of the deal that they struck, and they were going to have good matchups. You'd see like Patriots games and, you know, like Giants Eagles, like thing, like rivalry games, things like that. So that was the brief we had. You had to make this thing exciting. And we had a lot of work that we were really excited about, and it felt big and interesting, and things with celebrities in them, and just like stuff we were genuinely like, oh, this is going to be great. Like we were really excited. This is the NFL. Like it feels like, you know, this is an amazing brief. But after seeing 12, at least 12 campaigns, 12 that I remember that I could count over the course of 4 rounds of presentations, the client said that he literally just wanted to see people talking about football. And that's what he said. I just want to see people talking about how good the matchups are. And that's from a quote from a named client. So as a creative, that is not what we wanted to hear, especially like after we had work. You know, we just came up with endless ideas over the course of months and months and months. I know, I love this GIF. So like from, you know, we eventually like, you know, we took our lumps and got over it very quickly, because that's how the industry works. And we felt like we knew what we had to do. But then, like, how do you make that good? Like, that's a whole different story. Like, we know we have people talking about how good the matchups are. Making that, like, not feel like an absolute throwaway is a very difficult task. To us, at least. So what did we do? We decided to like build this world. And that was a quote from me a few slides ago. Build a world. So we knew there was going to be lots of talking about specific games. The client had decided that for us, and that's totally fine. But we had to figure out a way to make what we were going to make, the films we were going to make, feel special. And that was really hard. And we had to put that was like the task. That was like the hill we had to climb. We wanted them to feel like little scenes from a Coen Brothers movie, which had nothing to do with the brief, but it did feel interesting and cool to me. So it's familiar to see someone talking. You could shoot it well. You could have these characters talking, but that's just the first step. Like that still would be boring if it was just a quirky person shot well talking about football. That's not quite enough. So we like the idea of these little. And we wanted to, it's sort of like an even keel when you just have someone talking. But then we thought, like, this is football. There's a lot of exciting matchups. Like, we intercut these things with sort of the frantic, manic energy of what's playing out inside of the protagonist or the person who's going to be, like, cornering someone and talking. What's happening inside that person's head. So you're getting, like, a glimpse inside, like, the twisted mind of a football fanatic while that person is just talking, like steamrolling the other person in the conversation and talking. So it's essentially these two things just mashed together. Again, just assembling the right parts and like, how do you make that thing exciting? This is how we presented it. We wanted it to be so stripped back. And this is literally how we presented it. It was the matchup. Each script was 3 slides. There was little to no preamble, I think, strategic preamble at this point, because we were just so like down in the nuts and bolts of what we needed to do. And then the next page, and it's just like having the right pieces of reference, I think. So the next page, just like kind of a photo, a tonal photo of what this mechanic could be. And it's just the dialogue. And there's, I think it's like 1 or 2 action lines in the whole thing, but it's just a wall of dialogue. And this is what he wanted to say. And we had to prove that like, these are going to be films about football for people who understand football and will get excited about these specific matchups. It was very like inside, it's not inside baseball, but because it's a football thing, but it is very like, it's for a very specific group of people. And it demonstrated like a real depth of understanding about the players and about the game and about what the game means and about like, this is like the present versus the future and all these kind of things was the perspective. And then the world that we were wanting to build out, it's somebody who's intensely talking, and it's all of these things that are firing this guy's head. It's quick cuts. It's intense. It's like the intense looks of the, you know, from his eye. It's a lot of like really, really tight shots, because you want to feel claustrophobic. Like you're, sort of like you've been cornered and you're like having this verbal barrage hit you, and it's all like these really like intense shots of football. And then this is what it ultimately became. We made 6, I think, of them. We shot like 6 45-second spots with a million setups, because we had all these inserts. Like I was saying, some of it was football, some of it was like heightened reality things that we wanted to put in there. I think we shot it in like 3 days, and we had Craig Gillespie shoot it, who did like I, Tonya and a bunch of other things, and he was like absolutely amazing. But he fully got the world. He fully got how fast the pace of the whole thing needed to be, and just like how, like the intensity that needed to come along with it. And it took something that should have been, for all intents and purposes, like pretty bad, and made it something that felt like a little bit special, and it really stood out. Sorry, but
everything can be great. You have to believe that everything can be great. The minute you don't think, this is lost, nothing can ever happen, well, then it for sure won't be. And I can't tell you how many examples I've seen from myself and from people like you that did work that I wasn't involved with, where they took something that you could have given up on, and you make it great. If you're doing it right, it doesn't just come out like, okay, this guy just straight ripped off Coen Brothers. It's like Coen Brothers plus Lawrence plus NFL plus this brief plus your partner, and then you end up with something fresh and original, even though it took inspiration from a lot of pre-existing elements.
Exactly. This is almost like the very opposite of everything I just said in the last one, but still in the name of like, you have to find the tension and those things. So this is kind of all about another thing I've found very helpful, and not too dissimilar to the KFC example, is finding something within the canon of whatever brand you're on to draft off of. And I will also preface this with, this does not work for every brand, but certain brands, it really does. So an example I could talk you through is a project I did for Jordan Brand called Wings. Some brands just have iconic assets, and there's nothing wrong with leaning on those things. Like, and there's very few brands that have a canon like that, but there's a couple of them, and sometimes you'll find yourself fortunate enough to get to work on one of them. And when I worked on Jordan Brand, Jordan is a brand with like a rich, extensive history of like iconic images that have been burned into people's brains over the course of decades and decades, just because of who the man was and what he accomplished over the course of his years in the NBA. One of the things that that existed and was always like in the ether and hung over us when we worked on Jordan Brand was this image that was like, if you were a kid who grew up in the 80s or even like the early 90s, like there's a 50-50 shot you had this poster like hanging on your bedroom wall. I would say it's arguably one of the most famous like sports images of all time. Like it's up there with like the Ali knockout or like the Maradona hand of God. Like it's like, my parents know this image, like, and that's saying a lot. At the time when I was working on Jordan, they had athletes like, no, you're not a basketball guy, but like Kawhi Leonard and Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook, and like, you know, Kawhi's won championships. Chris Paul, unfortunately, hasn't won championships, but he's like one of the best point guards of all time. These are like really like super legit guys. But as we sifted through that roster, one person rose to the top. This person was a four-time champion, two-time Olympic gold medal winner, an MVP, a finals MVP, a three-time All-Star MVP, rookie of the year. But like, for one reason or another, like relatively unknown to most people. And it's because it was a WNBA player, and it was Maya Moore.
You got me.
And we thought that was really interesting. Like, she got brought up often, because she was just like, arguably the Michael Jordan of the WNBA at the time or whatever, like just unbelievably decorated athlete. She went on to be like an incredible humanitarian. She took a year off from the WNBA to help a man be freed from prison. Like, she's just like a real like incredible human being, and you know, just sort of like rose to the top. Like it was pretty clear when you look at, like, if you just put them on paper, like who's done what, like the proof is in the pudding type situation, her versus any of those guys who play in the NBA, that I just mentioned, like she trumps them all. So, you know, we started thinking of like, you know, could there be some tension, good tension in the idea of like taking one of the most iconic images of ever captured and ever committed to film, something with like that people have like more reverence for than a lot. It's like it's almost like holy at this point. And then like sort of turning the reins over to an unexpected, you know, new person to make some sort of a statement. And this was a moment where it was a real moment of like recognition for women and female athletes. And like there was a lot of good things happening in the world finally around that. So what we ultimately did is we didn't do anything new. We just took what was there and recreated it. And we remade the Wings, the original Wings poster. And we just shot Maya in that position doing the exact same thing. And the only difference was we just sort of slightly altered that quote, which is like a quote from a poet, William Blake, to fit the moment. And we swapped the Nike logo for a Jordan logo. And that was really it. But it's not that we just took a thing and then just redid the thing, because that doesn't do enough. But I think it was like, it was a combination of that, the tension of like, you know, like Michael Jordan essentially is is turning over the keys to the kingdom to this other person. There's like a story in that. And then this person is not an NBA player. This person plays basketball, but it's a whole different thing. And she deserves to be recognized for everything she's accomplished in the same way that Michael's been recognized for what he's done. And we did it, and we put a massive billboard up across the street in Minneapolis. She plays for the Lynx, I think, the Minnesota Lynx. And we put it up across from their stadium. I think it's the Target Center in Minneapolis on opening day of the season. And it was like, you know, for the right people, like for the people who are like sort of in tune for this, it was everywhere. And it was, you know, it was reported on, you know, a lot of news outlets about this one headline, which I liked, just a powerful image of quality. It's like it made a statement without us having to do a ton. Yeah. It was just like, you know, having the know-how to know like what could potentially be, you know, hit, get traction and make a statement that's bigger than just we put up a billboard that was a cool billboard that people, or a cool poster that people were familiar with, and now we're just going to redo it for another person. Like there was more to that. There was more substance to that. All right. So the fourth kind of thing that I like to try sometimes is just finding a new way to give people something that they're familiar with. Again, it's like hitting on themes from some of the previous examples, but repackaging things in a way that like makes them wholly new, you know. So an example I'll walk you through is we made a couple of films for an Old Spice set called Desperado and a Bad Guy. I think this is the first Old Spice assignment that you did not see, Dan. I was very disappointed because I was promised a Craig and Bagley brief, and then you guys evaporated into thin air and then rematerialized on the Samsung account. But so I'll forever regret that. But anyway, we made some films.
You did great without me.
Thank you. So anyway, so we had a project. This was part of a larger project where it was a couple of films for Ascent called Swagger. It was a couple of films for Ascent called Desperado, and they got just sort of coupled together under a larger umbrella. But we had this project for a deodorant scent called Desperado. I believe it was a new scent, but obviously, like that name gets your brain turning. It instantly takes your mind somewhere, and it felt appropriate to run with that. And a lot of the Old Spice stuff at the time did, like, you know, you draft off of the name, you try and make something super unique at the time, super unique for that, you know, playing in that world. But Desperado, along with that comes some extremely well-treaded territory. Like the idea of a Western-themed spot is nothing original. So, you know, there's this and this and this and this and this and this. And then, like, it goes on endlessly. You know, but we knew the subject matter should obviously play in that world. But we really did not want to make something that felt like the hundreds of other Western themed spots of the past. That was really, really important to us. And we didn't want to make something that just felt disposable, and no offense to, you know, any of those screen grabs of things I found, but like they, you know, you don't want it to feel like more of the same. You want it to feel like, you know, again, something that's unique, something that will occupy space in someone's brain for some period of time. And we knew that we were going to write Old Spice spots in the Old Spice world. Like that was a thing. That was definitely a style, and had an incredibly strong voice, and we were incredibly excited to work on that brand. You know, we felt like there was an intersection that we could find that was Old Spice and Western. And when you put those things together, with a visual point of view, all of a sudden it could become more than just a, you know, one of the hundreds of other Western themed commercials. And this was I went back and found a screen grab, of the spot from the original presentation. And if you look at the illustrations, like that could have been shot any number of ways. It's obviously an Old Spice commercial. It's obviously of Western subject matter with an outlaw and, you know, an evil sheriff who's got him tied up, and, you know, something happens where he gets out of a jam in a very manly, heroic way. To just go out and shoot it with any comedy director without like some other thing felt like, this was the thing that we felt like would take us over the top. And we like insisted to anyone that would listen that, it had to look like the good, the bad, and the ugly. And we just became obsessed with these old spaghetti Westerns, and how they were shot and how they looked and how they were framed and the pacing of the edits and all that stuff. So, it became sort of like the North Star. And we really felt like this would be, the special sauce that would like make these things like leap off the screen. And we were relentless about doing it and making it feel different. We went as far as, to fly to Mexico to shoot the campaign. We shot it on a ranch that, that was owned by John Wayne, at one point. Wow. Like no creative detail like went considered. And another thing is like, we had to make sure every step of the way that everyone was committed to the same vision. You know, from clients to account people to us, creative directors are very involved. It was, Eric Fahrenkampf and Max Stinson. They were awesome and had the exact same vision. You know, we made sure everyone was in lockstep at every point. The director was dialed in on the vision. We got, Steve Aysen, who is wonderful and lovely, and like also became borderline obsessed with these old spaghetti Westerns and how they're paced and how they're shot and how they're lit. So it was like, it was crucial. We went out and did our tech scout in Durango, Mexico, you know, like just poured over all the details and what structures would work, and what wouldn't work. 'Cause like it had to feel right. We shot on the right cameras, the right lenses, the right film stock at the right angles. Finding a director of photography from the film world rather than from the advertising world, because it's a really like, they're all going to become booked after I say this maybe, but it's sort of like a cheat code in a lot of ways to, having your thing feel different, having your commercial not feel like a commercial, like nearly immediately, because the camera work and the angles, at which they shoot things and just the way they light things a lot of the time, they just feel unique and they feel special. And like when you have, you know, whatever, like a Geico commercial, an AT&T commercial, and then your thing jammed in between those things, all of a sudden your comedy commercial that's also, you know, that's funny, just like any other comedy commercial, feels like wildly different just because of the way it's shot and colored and lit and the whole thing. There's a definitive difference when you just try to make something feel unique versus shooting a comedy spot with a comedy director and a comedy DP. So the next thing I can walk you through is this idea that I found of like meeting the audience where they are. So like, I think the advice here would be, or the example would be, find a good way to meet the audience where they are, even if where they are is kind of bad, which I think you will find yourself in this situation from time to time. It's nothing new. Like, you're not always getting a cool sports brief in this industry, or a brief for like cultural influencers. Like, there's, you know, most of what you work on is for the masses, and you, or for an audience that like isn't necessarily who doesn't have your background. So as a creative person, so you have to find a way to make that interesting to the world and interesting to you as well sometimes. So you'll find yourself in that position. I would say for sure. And an the example I have of this is a KFC project we did called A Recipe for Seduction, a Lifetime original movie. But the idea here was really like, how do you satisfy both needs? The need to make something that the target will engage with, because that's job number one, but also making something that will satisfy a creative person's need to be creative. Like, you want to make something that you want to play with, that you want to engage with, and like you're proud of if you're creative on a brief. The target for this was Midwestern moms, I think like 30 to 45 years old. So like, these are not necessarily, I wouldn't say it's the most like art minded demographic. So where we were at as creatives isn't necessarily like where they're at. And so you have to sort of like go over to where they are and meet them where they are, and start thinking about what types of things do they like, which led us to what we made, which was an actual Lifetime movie that aired on Lifetime, because we had a ton of research about Lifetime movies and what the demographics were, and there was a tremendous amount of overlap from the KFC consumer and the demo that, you know, this Mother's Day project was for, and people who watch Lifetime movies. So we made an actual Lifetime movie. It was called A Recipe for Seduction. It starred Mario Lopez as Colonel Sanders. This was a real movie that was really on Lifetime, and it aired during like part of their holiday lineup in 2020, which this was obviously the most 2020 thing that could have happened. It was like far for all of the rest of 2020. But like, it was a real movie that we did in earnest. It wasn't a joke. It wasn't, we didn't make the KFC version of a Lifetime movie. We just made a Lifetime movie. But the only thing that was different about it was that Colonel Sanders was the lead, was the romantic lead. And it had an incredibly tropey storyline. And it was full of all the usual tricks of a Lifetime movie is. There's affairs, there's a kidnapping, there's someone that tries to murder someone else. There's like, unrequited love. It had all the whole bag of tricks. We just dumped it all out into the script. And I will say, this movie was undeniably bad. It was a bad movie. It was ugly. It was poorly shot. It was poorly written. It was poorly acted. It had corny music. It had a terrible visual identity. But that was the thing that was interesting about it. And I think, like, back to a point I made earlier, like, if you're going to do something, just do it in earnest. Like, those Lifetime movies are not good. They're not good. They're not intended to be good. And I think, like, the audience that watches those things and that eats them up knows that this isn't like cinema. It's like fun, you know. It's fun to watch a campy movie that's not really well done. And honestly, the hardest thing of the entire project was fighting the urge to make this good. Like, I remember working with my partner at the time, Jared Higgins, and we got, you know, we were reviewing early versions of the scripts and like just fighting the urge to be like, oh, it would be funny if there was like a joke like this in here. And just, it just wasn't what it was about. Like, we sold it to KFC this way. We sold it to Light, because when we first proposed it to them, they're like, yeah, but you're going to make like the KFC version of it, right? Like, it's going to be like funny and there'll be jokes in it. And we were like, no, there's going to be no jokes in this. Like, the joke is the joke. Like, the larger thing is the joke. The fact that we made a Lifetime movie and Colonel Sanders is the romantic lead, that's the joke. And then we sold it to Lifetime the very same way. We're just like, there's no jokes. That's the joke. And we had to get everyone on board for that, because if we would have put a bunch of jokes in it, I really think it would have fallen flat on its face. And the community who, you know, like the target who watches these movies would have like, yeah, but you just made a mockery of the thing that I like.
Actually showed up here to watch. I showed up here to watch a romance, a stupid, bad romance that requires no brain power for me to watch.
Exactly.
That's what I want.
Yeah. And I think the point you can take away from this is just like, whatever you do, like, do that thing with conviction. Like, just make sure you're doing it in earnest. Make sure you're doing it the way it's supposed to be done. And I think, like, obviously this is a point I'm repeating myself, but I really do believe it. That you have to just do the thing the way it's supposed to be done. And when we did, like, we made a movie for a really specific target, but then the whole world talked about it. And like it got written up in The Atlantic and like literally everywhere. New York Magazine, Vanity Fair, Vice, Vulture, Variety. Like there was like 100 of these.
You're listening to an extremely abridged version of this interview. To listen to the full uncut episodes of Bagley Talks to an Important Person, many of which are 2 to 3 hours long, go to schoolofastonishingpursuits.com and check out the ASAP coaching and mentorship programs, including programs for creatives and CDs taught by yours truly, a program for account directors with the best account director I've ever worked with, former managing director of Wieden & Kennedy Portland, Jess Monzi. ASAP has programs on how to be a legendary ECD or CCO, how to sell award-winning work to clients, social strategy, and if you're an art director, you'll want to check out Art Director Mega Machine with legendary art director and 2023's most awarded creative in the world, Danilo Bohr. If accepted, you'll learn directly from some of the most accomplished advertising legends in the industry how to start doing the best work of your life. Through on-demand lessons and live Q&As with your coach, you'll learn exactly how they created famous campaigns for brands like Old Spice, Nike, KFC, Xbox, and more. Class sizes are extremely limited and do sell out, so get your application in ASAP. See what I did there? And as a bonus, you'll get access to the complete library of uncut episodes of Bagley Talks to an Important Person.
We're in the home stretch. Hopefully this wasn't too long. The last thing I think I would suggest, if you're in a jam and you don't know where to turn, is just turn to yourself, maybe I would say. Like, what are you interested in as a creative? And is there an opportunity to funnel some of that into the brief that is in front of you? And that does not happen all the time. I should definitely disclaimer that. Like, there, you know, there's, if you're into basketball and you're working on the KFC Mother's Day brief, odds are probably not going to be able to make a basketball themed KFC Mother's Day project. But there will be a time where it's like a perfect match, and you should, you know, you can strike when the opportunity is in front of you. So the example I'll walk through is this Clash of Clans project that we just did called Clash from the Past. And this was really fun. So for a client, Supercell, which is a Supercell, the background on this is they're a giant Finnish mobile game maker. They have a handful of titles. Clash of Clans is their biggest title. And it's like this enormous game that billions of people have had downloaded on their phone at one point.
It's just a money cannon. It just shoots money out of it. That's what that game does.
Yeah. And it's a fun game, and I see why it's like so addictive. And you know, they have a whole world, and like the game's super successful. The world they built around is super successful. I'm really, really fortunate for, you know, getting to work on it, and the clients are amazing people and amazing clients. But they gave us this brief to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the game Clash of Clans. 10 years seems like a drop in the bucket, I would say, like for gaming. You know, you could say, oh, 10 years, whatever. But like for a mobile game, that's huge. Like there's like probably like 2 or 3 mobile games that have lasted 10 years. And for one that's like stronger than it ever has been, which Clash is, 10 years is like a big milestone. So this was a cool brief. We were looking forward to it for a really long time. And then we got it. This was the brief, which is a wide open brief. Celebrate 10 years of The Happiest War on Earth, which was like our platform for the Clash work that we do, by turning Clash into an everlasting legendary franchise. And that's a daunting task. Turn Clash into an everlasting legendary franchise. That's like being like, make it the best thing presentation with lots of like different activations and things we could do on. And we didn't want it making anything from that deck, but there was one slide in there that we always like kept coming back to, like stash it for a rainy day. And it was just this idea that Katie Willis and Ryan Snyder had. Shout out to Katie Willis and Ryan Snyder. Love you guys. But it was for making like retro Clash cartridges. I mean, that was it. There was like no larger story to it or anything like that. We're like, oh, that'd be a fun thing to do, like make these cartridges. But we started thinking like, what would make a franchise feel legendary? Like that's a really, really tall order. And the thing we landed on was history. Like you kind of can't make something legendary that hasn't been legendary and that doesn't have the years under it. You kind of can't invent that. We took this as a really fun opportunity to funnel some personal interests into it. So I obviously have like the deep love of nostalgia and ephemera from the time I grew up. For me personally, at the very least, this campaign was an opportunity to funnel like quite literally a lifetime's worth of interest into a single project that was involved in. And like, I know this will never come up again, and this never has come up since, but it felt like a really like extremely fun opportunity for me and then everyone else working on it to make something that was like, oh, anything you were ever interested in as a kid, like maybe we can funnel into this thing that we want to make a history. So we started building a storyline for this campaign around the game's marquee character and a massive world and ecosystem that we thought could live, like, you know, and circle this thing. And what we landed on was the barbarian is Clash of Clans like Mario essentially. So we made a campaign where he gets zapped with like this big like zappy thing that's in the game to another dimension, and it's an alternate reality where Clash hasn't existed for 10 years. It's existed for 40 years, and it's this iconic franchise that's up on the level with Mario and Link and all these other like iconic gaming franchises, and by celebrating its 40th anniversary instead of its 10th, it allowed us to elevate it to legendary status and talk about it in a way where it was legendary. And it allowed us to create a whole world around it by literally inventing 30 extra years of history onto the brand. And this was the idea that we proposed. Instead of celebrating their 10-year milestone, we just completely ignore it and celebrate a fictional 40-year anniversary. And for me, like the timeline of the campaign that we were making, we were suggesting it, the game debuted in 1982 instead of 2022. That was literally like almost my entire life. Like I was born in 1981, we were saying in 1982. So it really was literally like, okay, and what are things that I was interested in like throughout the course of my life? And we made this big roving thing that was, that celebrated every decade of this iconic franchise. And we were trying to sort of like pull one over on the, cause Clash has an amazing community of fans and players. And we were trying to sort of pull one over on them and make them feel like, wait, did I miss something? Is this game that I've been playing for 10 years is actually derived from another game that I completely missed? We made this is probably the most amount of things I've ever made in a campaign, in like one single campaign, but it required us to make, like I was saying, 30 extra years of to create 30 extra years of history. So we had to consider a tremendous amount of things when we did this. So no detail, went without consideration. This, I'll preface this as well with like, this was like almost a year of production. We had to build out 3 extra decades of this game. So this is just like a couple of things that I want to cruise through, but like, we have an amazing studio here at Wine and Kennedy full of, incredible designers and design directors and, partners. And, you know, we have, creatives, that we staff the brief with that we all kind of worked as like a unit, trying to figure out what, this game would have looked like if you sort of like retrofitted, okay, what does the 80s version of this game look like? What does the 90s version of this game look like? What does the 2000s like PC version of this game look like? And then we made those things. So, you know, everything was like, okay, we did a takedown of like what the game should look like. What were the things that were popular at the time? How did these 8-bit platformers function and look? And what do the characters look like? So we did a whole comparative assessment of all the games that were like the cabinet games that were popular at the time. You don't just need a game. You need all the iconography and ephemera that goes along with it. So like, what did the Clash logo look like in the 80s? And how does that whole thing come into play? And like, there were so many other iterations that were explored around it. And then how do you pressure test that thing? What are the color palettes? And how does it work on ephemera, like t-shirts and like the sides of the cabinets, like the cabinet graphics? What is the character design look for? What does the Barbarian look like if he was first illustrated in the 80s versus the PSYOP rendered version that like we all know from the Clash films? So we went back to like the original Mario and Donkey Kong cabinet graphics, and like, okay, well, that's how Mario was illustrated 40 years ago. What does our Barbarian look like? And there's like different shades of it, and like, how did that come to be? This is what a cabinet topper could look like. And then like, we ultimately, and this is sort of like a pressure testing of it all, and then we did the exact same thing for the 90s. What types of games were popular in the 90s? It was like the Nintendo 64 era, so we had to do the exact same thing for this era. Like, what did the graphics look like? These are 64-bit games. How do they function? How do the games look? How do the characters look? What does the logo look like? And all these, this is an old version of this, but this is the only one I could find. But like, what does the character feel like? There's a lot more gradients, and there's a lot, you know, like a game could be more fully realized because now we're stepping into a more, you know, technologically advanced age in gaming. We did the same thing with the 2000s. We wanted to make a really dark and brooding game, and the narrative that we were crafting for the 2000s was that this game was a flop and almost put Clash out of business. And that's sort of why you haven't heard about Clash, these other games, because this game was so bad that it almost tanked the whole franchise. So it was games like Prince of Persia and like Halo and Tomb Raider. Like, it was that look and that era of game, like early Xbox and PlayStation 1 and PC games, and it has very dark iconography. And this is old. This isn't what went out into the world, but like, this is sort of how we pressure tested all this stuff, and we did a comparison, and then we pressure tested it against the modern day. And along with this came all of the character design and everything as well. I think I only had some of that for the initial thing. So we made all this stuff, and then we funneled it into a completely fabricated documentary that we made. That was like a real, it was 22 minutes long. It was 20 minutes and 22 seconds long, which is 2022, which was an Easter egg for the Clash community that they sniffed out.
This is like the most detailed alternate reality marketing experience I have ever seen.
Well, we knew it had to be, otherwise because their community is like, they eat the world up, they love it, but they're also super smart, and like, you know, they know how to use Google. So if you were to do this and then not back it all up with this stuff, they would just be like, it's fake. And like, there was a tremendous amount of people. What I really enjoyed like watching now, like watching the Africa campaign was released, and then watching it roll out, and then getting to interact with the people, because like, we were continuing to stoke fires over the course of about a week after this happened. There was people who thought it was real, which was amazing. There was people who knew it was fake, and they'd be like, it's fake, whatever, and that's fine, because like, there's always people arguing. But then there was people that knew it was fake and would fuck with the people that were saying it was fake, and they'd be like, are you kidding me? You don't remember the Clash Breakfast cereal? And like, there was a lot of that. So you kind of got their whole community like fired up, and there was a lot of infighting in a fun way.
Oh, I bet they
had. And it was great.
Yeah, they had to have a blast with it.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know if I have any more slides here. There will be a time, most likely, in your creative career as a creative, that you'll get to like funnel some personal interests of yours into a brief. And if you have that opportunity, jump on it, because like, you'll never care about something more than something you have a personal tie to. So like, you can just give it, you know, everything you got if you ever find yourself in that situation.
That's awesome.
So this is my summation. There's no wrong way to arrive at an idea in my long and roving talk with you, Bagley. I hope this is what people come away with. There's no wrong way to arrive at an idea, but you know, and there's many ways that you can kind of like unstick your brain if you're in a jam. There's plenty of them.
Very cool.
That's it. Could you please clap for me? Thank you.
What I saw, like, let me see if I can kind of capture, like, as an art director, how you get to, because when I look at your, I'm always telling people, like, find your voice and go all in on your voice. Like, don't try to be this sort of generic, obviously you're going to adapt to different briefs and different brands, but you should always find a way to bring your thing to it, and that's what's going to make it unique. And when I look at your work, I definitely see that. There's a huge range. There's like silly comedy and there's emotional, you know, sports stuff, but there's a level of craft. There's, everything is like incredibly considered. And what I see, what I heard today was that in some cases that's about taking something really familiar and then just putting a spin on it or putting some modern twist on it, changing it, making it new, but grounding it in something really familiar. In some cases, it's not changing anything at all, or it's leaning all the way into whatever that authentic thing is. So the Jordan thing, the Clash, mm-hmm. you weren't trying to put a spin on 80s design. You were like, we are going to make this thing look like it was in the 80s and the 90s and whatever.
Yeah.
So it seems like, because one of the things that I think art directors sometimes struggle with is like, where do I even start? Like, how do I,
right.
I'm coming up with a look. Where do I even, there's 40 billion fonts in the world. Where do I even start to think about what this font should be? And it seems like, and this is coming from a copywriter, so I don't know how this works exactly, but you start by, you know, it starts in somewhat of a logical place in terms of like, okay, what is this idea? And is there anything familiar or iconic to work with? And if there is, okay, then what's the spin I could put on it? Or what does the idea dictate? Maybe it dictates like just totally leaning into the 80s or totally leaning into that thing. And there's no sort of new thing from a design standpoint. But how would you describe it?
Yeah, I agree. Like for me as an art director, or, you know, when I was an art director or now as I evaluate things as a creative director, like I always found it really hard to just out of thin air visually, like it's without purpose or a reason or a point of view. It always felt like a bit arbitrary. It's like, well, I like this font, or I like a texture on this thing or whatever. And I think you can do that a lot if it's purely design. If you have a design project, like I do believe design, like probably, you know, needs to be conceptual as well. But your visual voice and like the visual sensibility that you apply to things has to have a point of view, I think. And it's not an easy thing to do, but I think like you always look for like something like an anchor to tie down to. So the Clash thing is a good example. Like you were saying, like, all that stuff was just drafting off of the decades that it was supposedly existed in. We looked and did like huge assessments on all of the iconography of the 2000s, all the iconography of the 90s, all the iconography of the 80s. And then we're just drafting it. We're making our version of those things. And those are the anchors that are holding our campaign down. And then when we make the documentary, we had to make a poster for it. We had to make a visual language for it. And we had to make, those bugs that, you know, exist in the lower two thirds, you know, that to have people's names on it, like of the talking heads, and you have to have credits, and you have to have, you know, all this huge visual language. So that's gotta be based on something. You can't pull it from thin air. So the whole documentary started with kids who entered a coding contest. It was like a, you know, an early 80s thing. They're coding on these old computers. What if we made that the visual language of everything? So it's all like, you know, there's a foundation already, and there's a reason for the typefaces we chose, and there's that's why like on the poster you see like a bit of torn edge, and there's code is living beneath it, because it's just like, it's again, it's tying back to something that makes sense. Just like find something that makes sense and then like create your version of that, and that can be your visual language, because otherwise it's like it's arbitrary. I feel like outside of my Coen Brothers example, like you can't just say, oh, I just like it. Like you kind of have to be like, well, this is the reason why I arrived at this decision. And as long as you have a reason, you know, it'll be strong. But if you don't have a reason, it's a bit more challenging.
But with that reason, then you do something that you like. Right.
Yeah, of course. Like you, and that's how you find your voice. You find like you were saying, and you're 100% right. I love craft and attention to detail and things that are like honed and, you know, like imperfect things that look hand done or things that look archival or whatever it is. Like they have like a, I always call it, and I think it's the wrong word, but it's like my word, but I always say like they have a patina to them. Like they look like they have existed and then they're like integrated yeah. into whatever the thing is, whether it's a poster or titles for the end of a TV spot or whatever it is. Like it kind of exists organically in the frame versus something that's slapped on after the fact. And that's what I like. That's like my voice. And I can say I like that, but there's a greater reason to why I made 10 different choices across 10 different types of campaigns. It's because it was appropriate for those things. The one unifier is that they all feel highly crafted. They all feel like organic and native to the frame that you're seeing. But I arrived at a decision for each of those in a different way because it was appropriate for whatever that thing that I was making was.
Which is encouraging because that means that we don't have you don't have to just pull something out of thin air. You can just be like, okay, well, whatever the brief is, I'm gonna investigate like what makes sense and what can I pull from, and then that will guide me.
Yeah, and honestly, it's easier to do it this way. Like, it's harder to just pull something out of thin air. Like, look at the brand. And you can do this on any brand. Like, look at what their website looks like. Look at what their packaging looks like. Baldwin, when he was my art director, creative director, always taught me like go to their archive. Like, go dig around in the stuff they made in the 60s and like, or look, you know, find old printouts from that brand, and then just see like what are the type decisions they made. How do I modernize that? How do I bring that into our era? It's a lot easier to do that, and then it also you have a foundation, you're reminding people, it's like a tie to the brand in some way, like in another way, so it feels deliberate, like a deliberate choice, and it's just easier to do it, to start there at least, instead of just like inventing something out of absolutely nowhere.
You've just listened to an extremely abridged version of this interview. To listen to the full uncut interviews, many of which are 2 to 3 hours long, go to schoolofastonishingpursuits.com and check out the ASAP coaching and mentorship programs. If you're accepted, you will receive personal mentorship from some of the most award-winning advertising pros in the world who ran places like Wieden & Kennedy and BBH. You'll learn the secrets and techniques to doing the best work of your life. Through on-demand lessons and live Q&As with your coach, you'll learn exactly how they created famous campaigns for brands like Old Spice, Nike, KFC, Xbox, and more. Class sizes are extremely limited and do sell out, so get your application in ASAP. See what I did there? And as a bonus, you'll get access to the complete library of uncut episodes of Bagley Talks to an Important Person.
Yes, it's Jason Bagley's podcast, baby. You better get out your notebook and your pen. He'll interview a motherfucking important person. God damn it, I did it again. It's Jason's podcast. Here we go.